Let me tell you about Public Square. There are several lines that meet other edges.
Youth of this country who are already in a disillusioned, disenchanted state will be encouraged.
Where we talk about the fine margins. Sometimes it's black, white, and blurry.
It's also informed by the need to save costs and reduce legislative time.
Then there are the actors right at the center, coming through political processes, which could be dramatic.
To the extent of this disbursement, if Parliament does not rise this morning.
And controversial.
If driving through the roads is engaging the macabre dance. Compatibility is that of government.
And there's you to help connect the dots from the top to the bottom. Join Rotimi Sankore and Arogo Obu at the Public Square every Friday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. 99.3 Nigeria Info.
Ladies and gentlemen,
this is the Public Square.
99.3 Nigeria Info. Time check is 4 minutes past the hour of 4 p.m. on a Friday. Welcome to Public Square with Rotimi Sankore. My name is Ezugo Chukwode. Today on the Public Square, we would focus on the military coup in Niger Republic. As well as looking at the fallout of the coup and the response of ECOWAS, we'll be looking at the bigger picture. Now, for everyone that is an ardent listener of the Public Square, you would understand that it is not just to look at the issues, it's also to look at these issues in context. Look at informed commentary and detailed analysis. The whole idea is for us to learn so that, importantly, when it is time to make our contribution, we will do that from an informed position, or our choices will be informed. I will be joined by Rotimi Sankore, and we are definitely going to have an interesting experience. Now, all eyes are on the Western region of Africa, and that is because of certain events that have unfolded in the political space. Now, last month in Niger Republic, you know, you had military personnel take over government, and President Bazoum, who is, I don't know if I should call him President Bazoum or Alhaji or Mr. Bazoum, who is currently in protective custody, in quotes, with the eagle eye of the military, the Niger military, watching over him. A lot has happened in the last 2 weeks. And I am very certain that when we delve into the conversation and begin to discuss all of the issues, you would have this understanding. Now, two very important points that I would like us to keep in mind. What are the circumstances that have made military coup more likely in Burkina Faso, Guinea, Mali, and now Niger Republic? Remember, ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States, we're looking at countries in West Africa, and we're looking at certain trends that have played out in Burkina Faso, in Guinea, in Mali, and now Niger Republic. In particular, what does the data tell us about where coups are more likely to happen and why? Now, remember that I said that Rotimi Sankore would be giving us informed commentary and would look at all of the data. It's important that you pay attention so that you have the understanding. And, you know, when you join in the conversation, you would know how we are going to proceed. Good afternoon, Rotimi. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Chukwudi. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much. You're welcome. Now, let's just go straight into that big question that I am very certain is in the mind of everyone that is listening, or everyone that has followed what has played out in Niger Republic. What has been decided? We have heard, you know, the special conference of the Economic Community of West African States. We have seen what in history and international diplomacy we call shuttle diplomacy, you know, people moving from one part of the world to the other, you know, trying to see how they can avoid conflict in, you know, which some people have said might most likely be the last or final resort. Let's begin with this question. What has been decided?
Well, the funny truth, Chukwudi, is that nothing has been decided. I mean, despite all the tension, you know, nothing at all has been decided. I mean, there's been a lot of banging on the table about deadlines and ultimatums. But if you look at the so-called strategic objective of the ECOWAS intervention, because that's where we need to take it from. What is the strategic objective of the ECOWAS intervention? Well, the ECOWAS claims that their strategic intervention, that their strategic objective is to intervene and restore President Bazoum to power. So how is that going to be done? Is it through diplomacy? Is it through threats? Is it through invasion? We are told yesterday after the ECOWAS special meeting, the communique said everything is on the table. You know, I mean, we all saw the news, but you know, we said everything is on the table, including force. But I mean, the point really is, if it is force, how? How is that going to be implemented? So there is a lot of rattling that force is possible, but nothing has been decided there except that they said they are activating the ECOWAS standby force. That's all
They've
done. And then the rest, and then the diplomacy continues. So, I mean, there has been no decision. It's worth noting that the Nigerian Senate has not authorized Nigeria to go to war. So that's unlikely to happen. The ECOWAS, however, Nigeria is part of ECOWAS. So if the ECOWAS standby force has been set up, there is a, you know, very small possibility that that ECOWAS standby force can be dropped into Niger Republic, possibly including Nigerian troops. Mm. I mean, that is all that can happen at this point.
All right. All right. Now, let's, I mean, in your analysis, I am very certain that people who pay attention must have heard you mention standby force. Standby force. Now, I grew up in the world where ECOMOG played a very important role in the Western African sub-region, and you know, at the point when it was, you had various or certain people who were dubbed rebel warlords or leaders. You know, you had ECOMOG go into these countries and you carry out very important action. Let's talk about the ECOWAS Standby Intervention Force and what exactly it is. What is the ECOWAS Standby Intervention Force?
Before we go into that, can we just backtrack a bit and explain that the ECOMOG intervened in West African conflicts, in Liberia especially, but that intervention was made after a civil war had broken out in Liberia.
Mm.
So that's the difference.
Okay.
There was already an ongoing civil war in Liberia between rebels and what, you know, the duly elected government. And the agreement of the ECOMOG was that they will intervene against the rebels. So there was already an ongoing conflict there. The war had broken out in Liberia. In this case, in Niger Republic, the war has not broken out between, a war has not broken out between Bazoum's forces and the military coupists led by the Brigade of Guards. In fact, if anything, the war is unlikely to break out because the people that seize power are the people that are supposed to be protecting Bazoum.
Exactly.
The Brigade of Guards. And effectively, they've taken him hostage. He's in, you know, he's under house arrest. The compound where he's being kept is said to be surrounded by soldiers. He's said to be in a lot of discomfort. You know, some sources close to him said he's running out of food and water, and that the quality of his jollof rice is decreasing by the day, you know, and so on and so forth. He's not being given access to health care. So in the case of Bazoum, in street language, he has been taken hostage. So any strategic intervention there, as claimed, will be to rescue him from the hostage situation, whereas in Liberia, a full-blown civil war had broken out between the elected government and the rebels, and ECOWAS intervened on the side of the rebels. Now, what is the ECOWAS intervention force? It's like a peacekeeping group. You know, it's not really like a commando strike force. I mean, let's look at where it was used in the Gambia after President Jammeh lost the elections in Gambia and refused to quit. Now, the opposition declared to have won the election in Gambia, and Jammeh said he was not going to go. So the issue was the people were on the side of the opposition. Half the army was on the side of the opposition and the people. Jammeh's bodyguards were with him. Jammeh had been isolated. The issue in Gambia was, how do they remove Jammeh from the situation without Gambia degenerating into a civil war? So the ECOWAS intervention force was like a peacekeeping force inserted between the protesting people, the opposition that won the election, a faction of the army on the side of the opposition, essentially to remove Jammeh quietly from the situation to stop Gambia from degenerating into a conflict. So that's the role of the ECOWAS intervention force. It's not a commando squad. It's not a strike force. It's not an invasion army, because people need to note it has civilians in it. It has police. It has soldiers, and it's consulted, you know, by many countries. So essentially, when you have a situation in which, as in Gambia, President Jammeh refused to concede the loss of the election, despite popular opinion that he had lost, their role there was effectively to go and contain him, escort him to the airport, escort him into exile, and then the people that won the election were sworn in. So, you know, it looks as if things are being deliberately confused when they say the standby force, the intervention force, is on standby. What are they going to do there? Are they going to invade Niger? Of course not, because that's not what it's designed to do. It doesn't have the capacity to do that. You know, I mean, an invasion force has to have the capacity to invade by air, by sea, take over your strategic objectives and hold it. And hold it. And we can see what happened in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and places like that. I mean, once you fire the first shot and enter, all the plan disappears into the wind, because essentially you started a war. And the ECOWAS intervention force is not designed as an invading army. It's a peacekeeping operation.
Hello?
Yes, I'm with you.
All right. So I'm very certain that, you know, the distinction is clear, and a lot of our listeners are clear on what the mandate of the standby intervention force would be. Now let's look at the chances, because it would appear like with every passing day and events unfolding, it would appear like, I mean, we would have to get to that point where something has to give, whether it is, you know, the military junts are saying, well, we are going to accede to the demands of ECOWAS and restore President Bazoum, or ECOWAS would have to take a stand and do something definite to restore President Bazoum. It would appear like something would definitely happen. Let's look at the chances of Nigeria or ECOWAS countries going to war with the military junta in Niger Republic.
So the chances are not impossible, but quite slim at this point in time, because normally, as in the case of Liberia, if there is going to be a conflict to support, in quote, illegitimate government, it means that there is a war brewing already. It means that Bazoum should have a significant section of the armed forces on his side defending his democratic mandate, and then you will have the coupists on the other side or the rebels trying to take over. This is not the case. You know, Bazoum's mandate, as it stands now, has been taken hostage. There is no brigade, battalion, division of the Nigerian army standing beside Bazoum and saying, we're here to defend the democracy against the coupists. Bazoum is a hostage. Is a, you know, so if the ECOWAS, by any misadventure, decide to intervene militarily against the mandate of the intervention force, because as we've established, the intervention force is a peacekeeping force, is not an invasion force. So if any conflict is going to happen, that conflict has to be a conflict to support a Bazoum side against the rebel side. But there is no Bazoum side. That's the issue. Bazoum is a hostage. So, you know, what are the chances? I mean, we've all seen the rumor of the military junta issuing threats and saying any attempt to rescue Bazoum will lead to Bazoum disappearing. So if the strategic intervention is to restore Bazoum to power and they have him under a hostage situation, I mean, what exactly will be the point of that intervention? So I think at this point in time, I mean, the chances of armies of ECOWAS attacking Niger Republic to restore Bazoum is slim. But it's not impossible, because all you need is one crazy general or politician on one side to order somebody to fire a shot. And when the first missile flies, all common sense will go out of the window. But it is less likely now. It is less likely at this point that there will be any invasion of Niger by Nigeria or any ECOWAS army. It is unlikely.
All right.
Not impossible, but unlikely at this point.
All right. Now, let's talk about the proposed intervention in Niger and how it is looking. Why is the proposed intervention being framed in terms of conflict and armed response?
Well, I mean, let's look at it first of all from the Nigerian point of view. And I would like to reflect on the internal affairs in Nigeria at this point. So we can see, for instance, what's happened in Northeast and Northwest Nigeria. The collapse of governance and development essentially led to extremists in Northeast Nigeria being able to recruit in large numbers from out-of-school children that were growing up, illiterate people, you know, economic desperados and so forth. Extremists were able to, essentially Boko Haram and ISWAP were able to grow in the Northeast as a result of underdevelopment and collapse of governance, you know, large ungoverned spaces. The same thing in the Northwest. Collapse of governance, underdevelopment allowed bandits to grow in large ungoverned spaces. Now, when all those things were happening, you never saw the federal government cautioning the state governors and saying, look, all of you that refuse to build primary schools in your state, all of you that refuse to build secondary school in your state, all of you that refuse to invest in youth development in your state, all of you that allow small girls to be forced into child marriage, and the girls are being forced to have 12, 13, 14, 15, sometimes 20 children each, with a lot of orphans that are available for extremists and bandits to recruit. We never saw the federal government, you know, talking to those governors to say, at some point, all this underdevelopment is going to lead to chaos, and you are going to be calling on the army to come and save you. And the money we should be using to develop the country will be used to protect your states. You never saw the federal government make that intervention. It's the same thing happening in ECOWAS. Essentially, because I mean, if you look at the situation, I mean, I will expand on it later when we look at why the coups have actually happened in Burkina, in Mali, in Guinea, and now in Niger Republic. When you have that kind of level of underdevelopment, what you have is popular discontent against the government. And soldiers who are supposed to be protecting the states, you know, will be looking at it and saying, well, they are the ones being sent to fight the bandits, the extremists, and so forth. And the politicians are not even necessarily equipping them well to do it. If they are the ones supposed to be guaranteeing the legitimacy of the state in Niger, but the politicians are corrupt, why don't they just seize power for themselves, try and fight the bandits or extremists, and if they can't, well, they just hold on instead of being used as cannon fodder. So, you know, what happened in Northeast and Northwest is what is being mirrored at the ECOWAS level, where instead of the Nigerian government to address Northeast and Northwest in underdevelopment terms, they started framing it as a war against bandits and extremists, which cannot be won militarily, because it can only get worse. You know, those conflicts get worse to the extent that the human resources are available to the bandits and extremists. And if you look at what's happening in Northeast and Northwest Nigeria, if we got to where we are with 13 million children out of school that are growing up, now we have 20 million children out of school that are going to grow up and it's still not being addressed. You can see that it can only get worse in the future. So the same thing at the Niger level, instead of addressing it in developmental terms, it's more convenient to frame it as military intervention because it enables them to cover up the underdevelopment issues.
All right. Now, we have to head out for a quick break. When we return, we'll carry on with the conversation on Public Square.
Let me tell you about Public Square. There are several lines that meet other edges.
The youth of this country who are already in a disillusioned, disenchanted state will be encouraged.
Where we talk about the fine margins. Sometimes it's black, white, and blurry.
It's also informed by the need to save costs and reduce legislative time.
Then there are the actors right at the center, coming through political processes, which could be dramatic.
To the extent of this Bisma, if Parliament does not rise this morning.
And controversial.
If driving through the roads is engaging the macabre dance. Compatibility is that of government.
And there's you to help connect the dots from the top to the bottom. Join Rotimi Sankore and Arogo Obo at the Public Square every Friday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. 99.3 Nigeria Info.
Ladies and gentlemen,
this is the Public Square.
99.3 Nigeria Info. Welcome back to Public Square with Rotimi Sankore. My name is Ezugu Chukwudi. Very long break, but we are back and we would just carry on with the conversation. Remember, we are focusing on the military coup in Niger Republic, looking at two very, very important angles. The circumstances that have made military coup more likely in Burkina Faso, Guinea, Mali, and now Niger Republic. And in particular, what does the data tell us about where coups are more likely to happen and why? We've answered questions on, you know, the position of the Economic Community of West African States, what exactly the standby intervention force is, the chances of ECOWAS going into, you know, ECOWAS countries or member nations going into war with Niger Republic. We've also looked at the proposed intervention in Niger Republic and how it is being framed in terms of conflict and armed response. Now, we have 23 minutes ahead of us and we are going to look at some more commentary and data analysis. Rotimi Sankore is very much on the line and we'll just delve straight into the conversation. Now, Rotimi, let's look at the benefits from a conflict in West Africa or the Sahel region. I mean, some people have said we do not want the western part of Africa to be involved in proxy wars. You know, you have countries who have interests somewhat, but because they cannot go at it directly against each other, they are going to look for proxies who are going to do their biddings. And it's looking like, you know, West Africa would be a battleground. Let's look at who benefits from conflict in West Africa or the Sahel region.
Yeah, I know this is a big question for you since you studied international relations and political science. Now, I mean, since the days of the Cold War, Africa has always been a proxy battleground. So the issue now is, you know, who benefits from a conflict in West Africa or in the Sahel? Well, certainly not the ordinary people. In fact, the ordinary people will be worse off Because if you look at it, first of all, if there is a collapse into widespread conflict, what is likely to happen? West Africa is one of the most underdeveloped parts of the world, with the youngest population in the world, with the most uneducated population in the world. Who are the kind of people that benefit from conflicts in those kind of places? Extremist groups like Boko Haram, ISWAP, bandit groups, and so forth. So if there is any widespread conflict leading to collapse of law and order, I bet you that what happened in Syria and Iraq with the rise of ISIS is going to be child's play. And we don't want that to happen at all, because unlike in those places, there are hundreds of thousands of recruits, orphans, you know, tens of thousands of orphans from maternal mortality, first child marriage, out of school children, all across West Africa and the Sahel. So any collapse into conflict there, all those extremist and bandit groups will just mobilize them. And that's just going to be the end of the Sahel and many parts of West Africa. So we don't want that. You know, the people are going to lose. There is going to be conflict and war for eternity if that happens. But who benefits? Who benefits? Well, the merchants of death, the merchants of war. There are always people looking for where to sell weapons. And that's where the proxy thing comes in. Who are defending interests? You can see the military regimes in Niger, Burkina, Mali, Guinea are already spinning their intervention as anti-imperialists, as anti-colonial. So if you look at Niger, for instance, Niger has huge deposits of uranium. In case people don't know what uranium is one of the key components of nuclear weapons. It's also one of the key components of nuclear power, and France benefits greatly from it. So, you know, the military, the regime in Niger is spinning their coup as anti-imperialist, that, you know, they don't want the French to keep benefiting from the mineral resources of Niger. So on the other hand, of course, the French want to keep benefiting. So the French want stability there, so they can keep benefiting. But the people who will want war, the people selling arms and munitions, definitely we want the conflict. The U.S. also has a lot of military bases in places like Niger and Chad for their own strategic interests. So obviously, they too will want a certain amount of stability in the place so that they can continue to project their power. But note that the Russians have started intervening in Africa in what is being described increasingly as a new scramble for Africa. We'll look at that in a bit more detail later. And, you know, you can see what is happening with private military contractors like the Wagner Group. If you look at other conflict zones in West and Central Africa, for instance, I mean, the Wagner Group not only plays a role as a private military contractor benefiting from the conflict, they also have economic interests in terms of mining, mineral resources, and things like that. In somewhere like Central African Republic, for instance, Wagner Group is said to make more than $1 billion a year in using its own private military contractors to defend mines from which it is extracting under conditions that are less than ideal. So there are a lot of global players involved, but I bet you, like the unending war in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where different militias, different governments, globally and otherwise, are playing roles in utilizing their weaponry for mines, you know, pushing one militia against another. If it breaks out like that across the Sahel and West Africa, it's going to be an unending war from which ordinary people are not going to benefit. So we don't want to go down that road at all.
Now it's clear that there is tension. There is. I mean, you have heads of state converging every market day, in quotes. you know, people making statements, you're hearing rumors, it would appear like everyone is on their toes. And in the end, nobody would want a conflict situation, because in the end, I mean, you have vulnerable people who are going to be at the receiving end. But these tensions have implications. And I would like us to look at the implications, you know, starting first with Nigeria, looking at the region, and then globally. Let's begin first with political implications. What are the political implications of the ensuing tension right now in Nigeria, in the West African sub-region, in Africa, and in the world at large?
Well, let us start with political. It's given the political leaders an opportunity to do a lot of posturing. So if you look at in Nigeria, for instance, where you're globally, there is a phenomenon called the tail wagging the dog. No, the tail wagging the dog, or short. In America, they just call it wag the dog.
Okay.
Where politicians use posturing for military conflict abroad to strengthen their own political position in Nigeria. Now, the conspiracy theorists, if you look at all of social media yesterday and today, are already trying to imply that the current president in Nigeria that was sworn in on May 29 is, you know, is wagging the dog, you know, that the tail is wagging the dog, that is using the posturing around ECOWAS to look presidential, to look, you know, like the commander in chief, to cement his place in power, and so forth like that. These things are not new to Nigeria. If you are old enough, you remember that when George Bush Jr. in the U.S. and Al Gore, then President Clinton's vice president, contested in the election in the U.S., presidential election, it was a very tight race, and everything was hanging on Florida. Everything was hanging on Florida. Whether Al Gore will be declared president or whether George Bush Jr. will be declared president. And that George Bush's brother, Jeb Bush, was the governor of Florida and therefore ran the electoral arrangements in Florida. Everything rested on what was called hanging chad. If you remember, the hanging chad was a voter's device, which if you push it, it will puncture the paper saying, this is the candidate you want to vote for. But there were so many hanging chads that it was not clear who were people voting for in Florida. Was it George Bush or Al Gore? Matter was going on in the Supreme Court when 9/11 happened, when Al Qaeda attacked the U.S. And, you know, George Bush immediately took advantage of it, I mean, to declare war on Afghanistan and Iraq. And, you know, Al Gore, being a gentleman, decided that he was not going to oppose a wartime president, and that was how that matter faded away. So globally, you know, these things have happened in which politicians use external conflict to bolster their position at home. Is that what the current president sworn in on May 29 is doing? Many conspiracy theorists are suggesting so, that he's using it to posture, you know, to show himself as a commander-in-chief, as a leader that, you know, cannot be disturbed or removed. So it has political implications. Well, the election tribunal is still going on, and we haven't had the last there. You know, will it impact it? You know, we don't know. But this is an implication. Regionally, a lot of the ECOWAS leaders, too, are using it to posture, to look presidential, to look like commanders-in-chief, which diverts attention from underdevelopment in their countries. Now, I want to call everybody's attention to something. If you follow me on Twitter, on social media, at Rotimi Sankore, you will be used to this kind of data. If you look at my Twitter handle, you will see, I think it's the second tweet, the 12 least developed countries in the world, the 12 least developed countries in the world on the Global Human Development Index, starting with Afghanistan, Sierra Leone, Guinea, Yemen, Burkina Faso, Mozambique, Mali, Burundi, Central African Republic, Niger, Chad, and South Sudan. All these countries are facing either banditry, extremist insurgency, or some kind of, you know, military presence in the polity, which has enabled the military to, you know, to force its way into the public discourse, and either ongoing civil war, just resolve civil war, or military has seized power in those places. Now, if you look at those countries where there have been coups, we'll come to it in more detail. In Burkina, in Mali, in Guinea, in Niger, and in Chad. All these countries are in these 12 least developed countries. Now, if you look at 30 countries in the world, including Nigeria, the 30 least developed in the world, the other 11 ECOWAS countries are among those 30 countries that are vulnerable to conflict, to military, to coups, and so forth like that.
So Rotimi,
you know, on a regional level.
So, Rotimi, I'm really sorry about that. There's this distortion, but I would like you to go over this information again. You say if we look at 30 underdeveloped countries around the world, Nigeria falls amongst these 30.
Yes, yes. I was saying
okay.
That the 30 least developed countries in the all the ECOWAS countries, including Nigeria, are amongst them.
Wow.
The 30 least developed countries in the world, all the ECOWAS countries, including Nigeria, are amongst them. Now, if you look at all those countries are prone to conflict, banditry, extremism, and all kinds of humanitarian crisis. Now, the around Niger allows the presidents of all the ECOWAS countries to look presidential, to look as if they are fighting for democracy in their countries, trying to sweep underneath the carpet the massive underdevelopment, conflict, banditry, extremism, high cost of living, poverty, and so forth that are going on in their countries. I mean, if you look at a country like Niger specifically, you know, we always talk about this thing. People don't understand it easily, that underdevelopment leads to fragility. Fragility leads to conflict. Conflict leads to extremism and banditry and leads to intervention. Hence, the big role that the military is playing in Northeast and Northwest Nigeria. If you look at a country like Niger, there are provinces in Niger, for instance, where something like forced child marriage is up to 90%. Up to 90%. What is the consequence of that? It means that a lot of young girls are being forced into childbirth and they are dying. When they are very young, living in tens of thousands of orphans, those orphans are being readily recruited easily by bandits and extremists that are gathering momentum in countries like Niger. And what is happening essentially is that as those insurgencies are going in those countries, the military is being forced to play a greater role in those countries, therefore legitimizing their role in intervention. So across ECOWAS and the Sahel, the posturing of the political leaders enables them to try and sweep under the carpets the underdevelopment which they are presiding over in the name of defending democracy. And I hope people are getting it. But if you are not, if you want to see the list of those 12 least developed countries in the world, I said, go to my Twitter at Rotimi Sankore, you will see it. Afghanistan, Sierra Leone, Guinea, Yemen, Burkina, Mozambique, Mali, Burundi, Central African Republic. Niger is the third least developed country in the world. So, you know, all this posturing allows them to come to Nigeria, make a lot of noise. Look at the guy in Cote d'Ivoire saying we are going to stand for democracy. The guy is not addressing the underdevelopment in his country that is likely to lead to a coup in his own country. You know, in fact, I hope we'll bring them soon. The United Nations Development Program, UNDP, just launched a report last week, which they call Soldiers and Citizens. And they made a point in that report. The UNDP is the world's leading development agency. And they made the point, coup risks are higher in countries where development is very low. So, you know, all the posturing by the ECOWAS leaders tries to hide the fact that across West Africa, across the Sahel, poverty, mass youth unemployment, high numbers of out-of-school children. So, you know, all this political diversion, you know, well, I mean, it may help and not help them. But we have an obligation to point out that doesn't take by surprise.
All right. All right. Interesting. Looking at the political implication in Nigeria, in the region, and across the world. Let's look at the economic implication, because these two go side by side. The economic implication of the tension in Nigeria, in the West African sub-region, and across the world.
I mean, obviously, cross-border trade has ended, because when you close your border with your neighboring country, all the trade on both sides stops. So already enduring poverty get worse. There is going to be more malnutrition, more food scarcity, less trade. Already all the states in northeast and northwest Nigeria bordering Niger are facing increased economic tension. Traders are trapped on both sides. You can bet your last dollar that there is going to be recession following very soon. If you look at the subnational data, it's going to happen. Even for those that want to japa, you will notice that the ticket prices are going up. I mean, one way ticket, for instance, to most of Europe now has gone from 1 million or 2 million to up to 5 or 6 million naira. Why? Because when you close the airspace, when you want to fly towards Europe, you fly north. If you look at the map of Nigeria, you fly north, you fly across Niger, you fly across Chad, you fly across Burkina, you fly across Mali, you fly across Sudan towards Europe. Now, you know, it's getting confusing. If you fly across Niger, will the civilian aircraft be shut down? If there is a risk of it being shut down, a city comes a 10-hour flight, fly to nowhere, you go one direction, then you fly around, then you land in two places to refuel. If you wanted to japa and you sold everything you had to buy your 2 million naira ticket, and at the time you go to buy, so it's 2 million naira OTR, you can't go anywhere anymore. Even people returning to school now, going for medical treatments. I mean, the economic implications on multiple levels are really quite high. So, you know, it's something that all the government should have looked at earlier. But, I mean, the politicians have private jets, you know, or they are using government jets. All these things are likely to affect them. So it's something that should have been calibrated very well before giving all these deadlines and ultimatums. Are there other ways that may have been possible? If peace and development is better in the long term rather than any conflict or economic crisis, which makes things worse.
All right, all right. You know, when you talk about political implications, economic implications, then there is also humanitarian implications. And you would recall that, you know, when we were talking about the chances of this degenerating into a full-blown conflict, we spoke about vulnerable people, especially women and children. Let's look at the humanitarian implications in Nigeria. I know that there are states that share boundaries with Niger Republic, and that is why even, you know, senators from the northern part of Nigeria played a very important role in, you know, drawing the attention of the Senate to a situation where there is an outbreak of war. Let's look at the humanitarian implications in Nigeria, in the region, and also globally.
First of all, Nigeria is a country that is not even at war, but we already have 3 million people internally displaced. Mm. And as I always say to people, if you don't understand the implication of 3 million people, a country like Jamaica is 3 million people. So we already have 3 million people internally displaced. In other words, no access to school, education, healthcare, housing, food. I mean, without the United Nations and other development agencies, would have had a catastrophe. on our hands, because they are the ones helping with food supplies, helping with vaccination, helping with water, helping. There's no war yet, already 3 million internally displaced as a result of poor governance and underdevelopment. If conflict breaks out along that corridor of northwest and northeast Nigeria, the humanitarian catastrophe is going to, I mean, it's just going to be unbearable. Easily, you'll be looking at, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 million. Don't forget, people are still flowing from Sudan into Chad, Niger, and places like that. So these are things that, you know, I mean, we don't even want to go down that road at all. So all these ECOWAS leaders coming to posture in Abuja, threatening that they are going to use force, that everything is on the table, so forth like that. And it's not going to do anybody any good. If there is any mistake, one person fires one missile and another person responds, it's a bit unlikely now. It's a bit unlikely. But look at what is happening in Ukraine. Everybody was so sure that Putin will not fire the first missile. Now they are on the verge of using tactical nuclear weapons in the middle of Europe. So not impossible. It's unlikely, but it's not impossible, you know. But what will be the implication? It means essentially that all of Northeast and Northwest Nigeria will be gone. And what that will mean is that all countries' economic resources, as bad as it is in Nigeria now, all this poverty, no job, no fuel, everything, all that resources will now go into unending humanitarian crisis in the place. A bit unlikely, but important to watch out for, so that citizens can always keep reminding the government, reduce the tension, reduce the tension, reduce the tension. Conflict is not necessary. Reduce the tension.
Hopefully, our leaders would take heed and do the needful to reduce the tension. Now, I am very certain that a lot of people are interested in the next set of questions, because at some point it would appear like, oh, this is Africa, there are no issues whatsoever, you know, we have returned to democracy, democracy is thriving. But now, look at Burkina Faso, look at Guinea, look at Mali, and now Niger Republic. In fact, some people have said that some of these leaders are doing all this gra-gra because they are looking at the situation and they are wondering, are we going to be next? We are going to be answering that very important question about the circumstances that have made military coup d'etat more likely in these countries that I have mentioned, but it would be after the break.
There are several lines that meet other edges.
The youth of this country who are already in a disillusioned, disenchanted state will be encouraged.
Where we talk about the fine margins. Sometimes it's black, white, and blurry.
It's also informed by the need to save costs and reduce legislative time.
Then there are the actors right at the center, coming through political processes, which could be dramatic.
To the extent of this disbandment, if parliament does not rise this morning.
And controversial.
If driving to the roads is engaging the macabre, culpability is that of government.
And there's you to help connect the dots from the top to the bottom. Join Rotimi Sankore and Aroho Obo at the Public Square every Friday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. 99.3 Nigeria Info.
Lagos, do not forget that football season is back. And if you're a football fan, I'll tell you this. There's nothing I have to tell you because you already know. And if you're not a football fan, maybe you should know too and get ready, like I say, to hand over the remote because, you know, as a matter of fact, you can use the STV stream to watch on other mobile devices, but we'll come back to that detail. Let me tell you that the moment we've been waiting for is here. All the big leagues, the Premier League, Liga, La Liga, Serie A, Champions League are coming back. And if you watched last season, you know it was really, really wild because the title looked locked and loaded for Arsenal. But then, bam! Manchester City swooped in with a treble and their third league win in a row. I sound like a commentator, don't I? Anyway, as the new season kicks off this weekend, all eyes are going to be on City and Arsenal for round two of the title rumble. You don't want to miss this because I would implore you to indulge your senses in this most exciting showdown, okay? Don't sleep on the start of the EPL season starting today, live and in HD on your Super Sport channel starting today. Burnley will host Man City at 8 p.m. p.m. There's Arsenal game and up to six games live on Saturday, and a Super Sunday with Chelsea versus Liverpool this Sunday at 4:30 p.m. on SuperSport. Now, there's going to be a total of 380 games this season. You have to upgrade your DStv subscription today to Compact on the MyDStv app and getting on all the non-stop football action. And don't forget, you can stream all the action on the go with DStv Stream. Picture this. The clock is ticking. The tension is mounting. And a last-minute goal is hanging in the balance. Can you feel the excitement? Look, get ready to cheer, celebrate, and feel every heartbeat. It's going to be like football like no other. The experience is amazing. If you love football, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Stay connected to see it all. Choose more. Choose all Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, the best commentary, and also in our own Pidgin language on SuperSport. Dial *288# or download my DStv app to stay connected, or upgrade to DStv Compact for all the action. It's your moment of the best football experience with DStv.
Breaking news, updates, and the best of talk.
Women have to work twice, even thrice as hard for them to get things that just come so naturally to a lot of men who feel that leadership is their right.
We're in prisons for how many years?
For 6 years, 8 months.
Were you going to court from prisons then?
Yes, but before I started court, it took me 2 years.
Just being in prison?
Yes.
Without your case even start
in
at all?
In confinement.
You were there?
Yeah.
Here on your number one station for talk, 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.
Welcome back to 99.3 FM Nigeria Info. Really very sorry about, you know, how today unfolded. I can see complaints about how long we have to take adverts on WhatsApp, but we're really very sorry about that. It's going to be two parts because there's still a whole lot to discuss. With Rotimi, I'm still going to be looking at the circumstances that have made military coup d'etat more likely in Burkina Faso, Guinea, Mali, and now Niger Republic, and what data tells us about coups and more likely where it would happen next and why. I mean, you all understand what history is, and it's not about, God forbid, it will not happen, or our case is different. If you do not do the right things, you're going to deal with this situation. So most definitely, we are going to carry on with the conversation next week.